नमः विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण कृष्णाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत श्यामजी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे जिनशेष शून्यवादी वो शक्य देशता We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 74, text number 18.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Because of the great number of qualified candidates. Sahadeva.
Sahadeva.
Sahadeva, the younger brother of Maharaj Yudhisthira.
Sahadeva.
Sada.
Sada.
Then. Amdali.
Amdali.
Spoke.
Spoke.
Translation and report. Follower of God. Behind the race, Srila Prabhupada. The members of the assembly then pondered over who among them should be worshipped first. But since there were many personalities qualified for this honor, they were unable to decide. Finally, Sahadeva spoke up. This reminds me of the question I'm often asked, there's so many gurus in ISKCON, who should I choose to be my spiritual master? I can't decide. It reminds me of them. So many qualified persons here. We're trying to decide who should receive the first worship. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, another important feature is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first offered worship. This particular ceremony is called Agra Puja. Agra means first and Puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of the president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhisthira was a devotee of Lord Krishna. Still, text 18 states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the Brahmins present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but rather conventional Brahmins uncertain of the supreme conclusion of Vedic wisdom. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones, and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Vipayana Vyasadeva, who thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? Furthermore, here is Sahadeva, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. He can help appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if he somehow fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. Having made up their mind in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Dham Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakamvitamscha.
So, this is pretty amazing. These acharyas, what kind of vision they have. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was not present in that assembly. And even if he were present, these great personalities were thinking. That was not, their thoughts were not, openly visible to all the members of the assembly. So this is really inside information. What was going on in the mind of Brahma, Shiva, and Vipayana and Vyasa? In other words, all three of them were thinking exactly the same thing. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we're talking, 4,000 years later, he was able to have a perfect understanding of what was going on in their mind during this sacrificial ceremony. That's called transcendental realization. I mean, this is incredible that somebody could realize like that. So, this is the caliber of person that we should actually be hearing from. This is called Trikalaya. And he was the perfect knower of past, present, and future. These are the caliber of people that we have to hear from. Those who have actually realized the absolute truth.
tadvidi pranipasena hariprasnena saivaya upadekshantite jnanam jnanatata darshana.
Just try to learn the truth by approaching the bona fide Krishna Master. Inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you. We cannot approach an ordinary person if we want to realize the truth. Why is that? Because an ordinary person is subject to the four defects of conditioned life. What are those defects? Number one, his senses are imperfect. It's like we may hear an explosion. Now maybe that's a car backfiring out on the street, or maybe somebody shot somebody. Some, you know, conflict within the family, and somebody shot their brother. You see, you hear an explosion, you don't know. It sounds like, well, maybe it's a car backfiring. I don't know. So the senses are imperfect. And because the senses are imperfect, what is the next thing? We have a tendency to be illusion. I'm thinking it's like this, but no, it's actually like that. You see. Because my senses are imperfect, then I can be illusion. And if I'm an illusion, then what happens? Then I can make so many mistakes. You see, I thought I was doing the right thing, but lo and behold, I did the wrong thing. So, in spite of this, in spite of having imperfect senses, in spite of having a tendency to be illusion, in spite of making one mistake after another mistake after another mistake, what do? I think I am great. You see, you can't question me. I know everything. What is that called? Cheating. So, anyone who is subject to these four defects, conditioned by it, they are not a bona fide authority to hear from. We have to hear from those persons who can speak to us from beyond the platform of conditioned consciousness. And then we can have some enlightenment in regard to who I am, where have I come from, what is my duty? How can I execute it perfectly to achieve the supreme destination which I'm meant to achieve? This is required. In this world, there is a great shortage for such persons. There's all full supply of everything else. The only real scarcity here, according to Srila Bhaktivedanta, that is the scarcity of Krishna consciousness. Everything else is there. The other apparent shortages which are being complained about nowadays, they're all simply the result of a lack of Krishna consciousness. Just like here in Australia, there's so many complaints now about the rain shortage, not enough rain. If there was simply Krishna consciousness, that the rain shortage would not be there. Anad bhavanti bhutani parjan yo ansam bhava jagad bhavati parjan yo yagya kama samud bhava. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. See, and rains are produced by the performance of yagya, and yagya is born as prescribed duty. So in this age, we know what is the yagya, sankirtan yagya. But are they willing to do sankirtan yagya? No, they just want to complain there's no rain. See, why don't they do sankirtan yagya? So we can simply bring Krishna consciousness individually and collectively, then all the problems of the world will be solved. For each one of us individually, we all have so many problems, isn't it? You have your problems, I have my problems, we're all thinking problems, problems, problems. So if we simply bring Krishna, we say from this moment on everything is simply for Krishna. Whatever the result is, that's for Krishna. I'm going to try my best to please him, and whatever comes of my actions, it's all his property. Everything is for him. If we take this spirit, if everything is petition, then all of our problems will be solved. And if we can induce the people of this world to follow suit, to follow the same line of action, the same line of mentality, the same line of speech, then the whole planet will become revolutionary. It will be a golden age, a Satya Yuga. Right in the middle of the Kali Yuga, we can have a Satya Yuga for 10,000 years. This is a golden opportunity that Prabhupada has given us to be pioneers in bringing in a Satya Yuga. It's actually predicted it's going to happen. You know that verse? Anybody know that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita? Sajjana durjana pangu jadda andhagana prema vanyaya do by law jagatara jana. Do you know what is prema vanyaya? It is a very wonderful thing. Recently we had some in the recent time that tsunami came and devastated so many places. So, there's another type of tsunami. It is called prema tsunami. And it is this Krishna conscious movement. This is a tsunami of praying. And what does Krishna Das Kaviraj have to say about this praying tsunami? He says, it doesn't matter what you are. You may be Sajjana, a pious man. You may be Durjana, a rogue, a rascal, a jagaya, a diet. You may be Andha, you may be blind, you may be Jada, invalid. You may be Pangu, vain person. Doesn't matter what you are, Jagatara Jana, throughout the entire universe, every single jiva soul will become Dubaila, drowned in this tsunami of rain. So the prediction is there. Now who's going to get the credit for being one of the persons that made it happen? It's up to each and every one of us. Do we want to be part of the solution for the problems of the world, or do we want to be part of the problem? It's really either way. You're part of the solution, or you're part of the problem. If you're with this Krishna consciousness movement and you're pushing it forward, then you're part of the solution. And if you're not, well, I don't know how to break it to you, but, you know, I have to tell you the truth. If you're not, you're part of the problem. So, be part of the solution. Get credit for being one of those daring souls who stuck their neck out for Prabhupada to push toward this movement. Take a risk. This is the greatest adventure to be a preacher in Lord Chaitanya's movement. It's the supreme adventure, actually. The life becomes an exciting adventure that every day, every moment, becomes the most exciting adventure. Transcendental what's a good word for it? Transcendental, well, adventure is, I'm looking for a better word. An incredible experience. An amazing experience. Just consider the Prabhupada was tasting, the nectar he was tasting, being completely sold out to his Guru Maharaj, you see, at every minute. I mean, Prabhupada was so much blessed with nectar because he was totally surrendered to pleasing his spiritual master. So much nectar he would taste. That's how we convinced. We could see how much nectar Prabhupada was tasting. Of course, we couldn't see. We only got a little, you know, a little glimpse of the unlimited ocean of nectar that Prabhupada was tasting. But just even what we could see with our, you know, through our conditioned senses, that little glimmer, that little glimpse of what it was like to be completely sold out to Guru and Krishna, that was enough to convince us to give our life to Prabhupada. Prabhupada is this relishing, sweetest nectar every minute, just like, he's like a volcano, a nectar volcano, just erupting this lava of Krishna prema. You know? wherever he went. And you get close to Prabhupada and you just be carried away by the nectar. Wow, this is amazing. I mean, it was amazing, the potency of Prabhupada. I know it was, I hadn't even met him yet. I had already committed, surrendered myself to become a disciple before even seeing him, just by associating with the devotee and hearing about Prabhupada. I remember it was so, his power is the Shakti of Prabhupada was so great. I remember there was one lady, she had a little baby, and they were coming around programs there, asking the Vishnu Janmarma, she was preaching. And the little girl, she heard about, this little baby girl heard, always hearing about Prabhupada. So she used to call out to Prabhupada. She used to say the name of Prabhupada with so much feeling, with so much love. She would go, Prabhupada. The little baby. And I just heard this little baby girl going, Prabhupada. And you know, just hearing this little baby girl, the way she would say Prabhupada, you know, melted of my heart, that I have to also become a Prabhupada follower, you know. I mean, it was really amazing. The Shakti, it was inundating the whole planet at the time. But I look back at it historically and think, well, when did I first take an interest in self-realization? Well, it was in the fall of 65, my freshman year of college. But I was thinking, that's just when Prabhupada set foot in America. The same. It was, I don't know if you could say it was a coincidence, but I say no, it was Prabhupada's Shakti. The fact that Prabhupada arrived in America, there was a Shakti that is now present in America, which has never been there before. A pure devotee is walking in America. So there, that at the same time, the pure devotee arrives here, immediately I thought, what is the purpose of my existence? That's what I really want. I arrived, you know, as a freshman in college and say, okay, boy, what do you want to major in, you know? But I've been thinking, major? First tell me who I am. You know, how can I decide what to major in if I don't even know who I am? Doesn't make sense. First tell me who I am. Tell me who I am. And then I'll think about majoring. But nobody could tell me. And I was taking so many courses, philosophy, the history of Western culture, all the great thinkers we were studying, but nobody gave even a clue as to who I actually am. I even wandered the campus bookstore looking at, you know, book after book after book, trying to find some book that would tell me who I am. There wasn't anything that could tell me who I am. So, if we actually come in contact with a pure devotee of Krishna, one who is fully absorbed 24 hours a day in hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord without any material motives, if we can come in contact with such a personality, it is a great inspiration to us. And that's how Prabhupada got us, just by his association. There was nothing like such a personality we'd ever experienced. I used to write letters to people and get letters back. You know, I'd have a pen pal. But nobody wrote letters the way Prabhupada. I got about 10 letters that Prabhupada wrote me. They're just amazing letters. So much wisdom, so much love, so much nectar just emanating from every word in those letters. How did we have such experience of a person who can write letters like that? Everything about Prabhupada is unbelievably ecstatic and wonderful and sublime and full of unlimited mercy. So, this is the caliber of person that we need to approach to actually become enlightened in self-realization science. The present time in the world is filled up. There are so many gurus. But they're bogus. Practically speaking, they're all bogus in the material world. Especially since the 60s, there's been just a huge proliferation of yogis, swami, gurus. But what are they teaching? I went to one, I remember, when I was, before I came to Krishna consciousness, when I was searching, who am I? One guru said, I am God, you are God, we are all God. Simply cheated, rascal. We're all, Adama said, we're all avatars. I'm an avatar, you're an avatar, we're all avatars. Simply bogus nonsense. Simply bogus. Cheaters, rascals. Prabhupada was very strongly preaching against these bogus gurus. There was one case, there was this one guru named Guru Maharajji. This king claimed that he was God. He had a big movement. The followers were called Premis, you know, like Krishna Premis. The Premis. He was so powerful, there was a big famous stadium, the first air conditioned athletic stadium in the world, the Astrodome in Houston, Texas. So Guru Maharaj filled up the Astrodome with Premis. I mean, tens of thousands of Premis came from all over the world for his darshan. He put a peacock feather in his hair and he held a flute in front of all these people. He said, I'm not Krishna, I'm whatever you want me to be. This way, simply bogus. So anyway, there was one press conference, and the press came to meet the Guru Maharajji, and somebody had the, somebody who could sense the guy was simply a rascal, they brought a tie. They wanted to offer him a pie. So how did they offer it to him? In the face. They threw a pie in his face. And so Prabhupada heard it. It was a morning walk in France, and the devotees were telling Prabhupada, they went and threw a pie in Guru Maharaj's face. And Prabhupada was very enlightened of it. He said, our men should go and do that pie. He said, oh, he said, actually, our men should go and test urine in the Prabhupada was very, very, very strong against these bogus spiritual masters. Because they're such cheaters and rascals. I got initiated by one of them, actually. I had to pay 1 month's rent to get my secret monkey. I went to a motel room. And some disciple of the guru in a business suit, he gave me my secret mantra for my 1 month rent. And I went home and I was chanting it. Aim, aim, aim. I wasn't supposed to say it out loud. I just revealed it. Aim, aim, aim. And nothing happened. I was waiting for the light. Come on, within. I'm, what's happening? I'm. So they had a meeting a couple of days later of all the new initiates. You know, everybody's going, wow, isn't it great? Oh, yeah. I'm really tasting the nectar. Like, everybody just talking around. I was sitting there like a wallflower. What's wrong with me? You see, I was thinking that it was Vanakas, that there was something defect in me that I just couldn't become self-realized like everybody else could. I even had been in for a special check session with the advanced teacher. She took me into the bedroom and she had me going through it again. I'm, and still nothing. So I just thought, I'm hopeless. You know, everybody else is becoming enlightened and I'm just hopelessly drowning in ignorance. What can I do? But then, some friends invited me to move them to Denver, and I did. Because at least there was some friendship from somebody. But then some friend introduced me. He wasn't a devotee, but he had been in San Francisco during the Haight-Ashbury era when the devotees were, you know, preaching like anything in Haight-Ashbury. And he taught me the mantra. Yeah, and that was an incredible beginning for me. He taught me this mantra. And everything just turned, that was the beginning, you see, when things turned around. My first thought was, I didn't know about the movement yet. I just knew about the mantra. And I'd still been trained by all of these my body, my body philosophy. So I didn't really understand the philosophy, the Siddhanta of Bhagavad Gita. But I knew the mantra was really something. And it, just by chanting the mantra, I resolved to completely leave the Western world and just go to India and be a sadhu, mendicant the rest of my life. But on the way there, I was on heading to New York to catch a and to get a job on a freighter, like a Jalajit or something like that. It goes back and forth, and you can get a job for work on the ship and you get a free passage. That was my plan. But on the way there, something said, "Why are you going to India? You should be going to San Francisco." I didn't know why I was getting this. It was like something inside was saying, "No, San Francisco. You should be going to San Francisco." So I turned around and went the opposite direction. Suddenly my stomach, that was the means of transportation, they hitchhiked. Tugged my thumb out, and a couple, two or three days later, there I was in Gate Ashbury. And I went, we'd always heard about, Golden Gate Park, so I wanted to go check out Golden Gate Park now that I'm here in Gate Ashbury. And there they were. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So, in this way, I was very much blessed, and gradually it took some time. I was a stubborn case. I had been very much influenced by Mayavada philosophy. The devotees invited me to that temple, the famous, the second temple of this kind, 518 Frederick Street. So they invited me over to the temple. But I was staunch Mayavada philosophical. I knew the mantra, so I was chanting Hare Krishna. Some Brahmacharya said, "Oh, you're chanting so nicely." And I was thinking, she only knew that I'm Krishna. So I was really, I was really poisoned by my life philosophy at the time. And after a couple of years of being really beaten by the material energy, smashed this way, smashed that way, again and again and again, I was just on my knees begging God to guide me how I could be a perfect servant. And that's when Vishnujamana showed up and taught me what it means to actually spend it to God by becoming a disciple. In the ninth grade, Om Vishnu Pa Paramahamsa Prabhupada Asta Paradhita Shishima Devi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, by the grace of Prabhupada and his wonderful, wonderful followers, I got this opportunity to come out of the quagmire of material existence and to be engaged in the eternal service of Guru and Guru. So there's no greater opportunity that any of us have than to do this. There's nothing to compare to this. Even if you become Brahma, the demigod who controls the whole material universe, that is nothing compared to being a follower of Papa. You see, a disciple, a grand disciple. There is nothing compared to being a follower of Papa. Why? Because he's not an ordinary spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada is called Shaktivesh Avatar. He has special shakti from Krishna. He is an eternal associate, Nitya Siddha of Krishna in the spiritual world. And he was ordered by Krishna to come here to this plane and to write these books. Prabhupada was directly sent here by Krishna. He didn't come like we did with the desire to lord it over, to enjoy our, to be the enjoyer. He came here on the order of Krishna to save us from this horrible repetition of birth and death. So we will take full advantage of the mercy of Prabhupada that is coming to us through his books, through his representatives, through the holy name, through the deities, in all the different ways that we are able to connect to Shri the Prashada, in all the ways that we can, with our service, in all the ways we can connect with Prabhupada's mercy. And we should just, try to just become completely absorbed in serving Prabhupada 24 hours a day. That will be the protection. That will take us out of this material existence and bring us back to home, back to God in this very lifetime. And then if we're ever in a temple where the confusion is there, then who should we worship first? We will always know who is that greatest spiritual master in the history of the universe. His divine grace, Om Vishnu Pa Paramahamsa Prabhupada Charya. Bhaktatarpata Sri Srimad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Sri Nandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. We will always know who is the greatest spiritual master and why we have determined that I will serve Prabhupada's mission, and that's it. I have no other position except to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
How did, if someone is considering choosing a spiritual master within Islam, how would you advise one to choose them?
Can you help me understand?
If someone is seeking the spiritual master, how would you advise that
someone is what?
Looking for the
spiritual master. Oh, someone is looking for a spiritual master.
Or choosing the spiritual master.
Choosing one?
Yeah.
Yes.
So how would you advise them?
Yes. If someone is saying, well, I'm looking for a spiritual master, and who should I accept as my spiritual master? The first thing is, you have to understand that that spiritual master has to be someone who is in the line of Srila Prabhupada. That's the first thing. Now, which one of Prabhupada's followers should one choose? That we have to look in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains what is the means of actually realizing the highest truth. That you approach the spiritual master to inquire from him and to render service. So it is through that inquiry and service to the spiritual master that one actually can realize the highest truth. So you should see which follower of Srila Prabhupada, with which follower of Srila Prabhupada will I have the best opportunity to inquire and the best opportunity to render service. And that's the one you should take to your spiritual master. Because that's how you advance. It doesn't matter if he's a big name, famous guru with thousands of disciples, or he's some small time guru with, you know, 100 disciples. That's not really the thing. The thing is, where do you have the best opportunity to inquire and render service? That's what you want to take to the spiritual master. Because that's how they advance. By inquiring and by service. If we take it on the basis, well, if someone is a big name, you know, famous, that person may be the best person for inquiries and lending service. But the point is, if I'm simply taking it and because this one's famous, then maybe I have the wrong understanding of guru. Just for the sake of name and fame, I want to have a famous guru. That is not the criterion. Criterion is where do you have the best opportunity to inquire into another service? That's the criterion. Is that clear? Any other questions? Is everybody satisfied now? Now that we have a new year here, everyone's ready to completely dedicate 2008 for Prabhupada mission. Complete total enthusiasm now. All the stumbling blocks are kicked out of the way, ready to go full force for Prabhupada. Are you even ready now? Are there anyone feeling some impediment that I can help to? I can perhaps serve you by helping you to get the impediment, the roadblock out of the way. Is anybody feeling it? Anyone who is a follower of Srila Prabhupada, who is following Prabhupada's instructions, any disciple of Prabhupada is following his instructions, they are bona fide. Now, someone deviates, that happened to some of our gurus, they gave up serving Prabhupada's mission. That happened with one big guru in Europe, and he left this country. Doesn't even chant Hare Krishna anymore. So that person is not qualified. But anybody who's continuing to follow Prabhupada's mission, they're all bona fide, they're all wonderful. This is a matter of practicality. Where are you going to get the best opportunity for inquiries and service? That's all. They're all, anyone who's serving Prabhupada's mission, following his instructions, they're all wonderful and they're all bona fide. But you have to see which one is the most practical for you. Where are you going to get the best opportunity for inquiries and service? Is that clear? Question? Okay. Let me get my hearing aid on, see if I can muster up enough shakti with the help of these batteries. Hear you. Okay.
When you get that choice of spiritual master, how do you make sure that you
are being sentimental? Help me, baby. When you make a choice of the spiritual master, how do you know that you are not being sentimental? Well, you should really look at it objectively as possible. Sentiments are an unavoidable part of it, because that's bhakti means pure sentiments. Bhakti doesn't deny sentiments. In fact, Prabhupada told us, he said, now you should, if you said the whole world is imitating America by building skyscraper buildings, so now if you American boys and girls will sing and dance in emotional love of God, then the whole world will follow you. So we're not down on emotions. On sentiments and emotions, if they are properly channeled in Krishna's service, are very wonderful. So if one has a sentiment for a particular spiritual master, and that spiritual master is giving one a good opportunity for inquiring in service, then go for it. If not, the sentiments have to be totally, you know, ruled out. That it's just pure, you know, science. Because the sentiments are part of the process. Where do you feel? Where does your heart take you? That's also should be there. So, but there's mere sentiment and there's no. It's just like someone may feel very sentimental about, what is that lady's name? Amachi, the hugging guru. She inspires people's sentiments. They line up to their hug. And it's just pure sentiment. Oh, I hugged Amachi, I saw the light, you know, I felt I was in nirvana when I was hugging her, and oh, it was so wonderful, you know. But sentiment is no science. So it's actually a combination. Just like, what is Prabhupada's name? Bhakti? Bhakti, that is spiritual sentiment. And Vedanta is looking at it scientifically, you see, from the Shastra viewpoint. So actually you should, sentiment should be a part of it. Where do you feel inspired to give your love? You see, that should be a part of it. Then you should also see, well, is he a follower? Is he actually following Prabhupada? You have to read the book. You have to hear his lectures. You're supposed to study the Guru for 6 months. Make sure it's not just mere sentiment. Understand? Does that help you? Yeah. Yes.
Prabhupada has a very little
opportunity to inquire and serve
his guru. And to what you said, could you explain further?
Yeah. So when they say, well, you're giving an example which doesn't seem to apply to Srila Prabhupada. But the fact is, I'm giving the exact words of Krishna, so they can't be incorrect. But then we get that, so then how does Prabhupada's guru disciple relationship correlate with the instructions of Krishna? Well, the first thing is that Prabhupada did inquire. He did do that. Prabhupada asked the most important question. And how can I serve you? If one, if, If one has only one question to ask, and one asks that one question, which is, how can I serve you? And then faithfully does exactly what he's told, then that certainly fulfills the requirement of inquiry. And in terms of service, who can, of all the followers of Bhakti Siddhanta, who served him more perfectly than Srila Prabhupada? So Prabhupada actually does fit those, because he didn't ask one question, another question, another question. Doesn't mean that he didn't fit that verse. The fact is, he asked the one most important question. That was the letter he wrote, but just before Bhakti Siddhanta Sadhguru Thakur's departure. He asked the one most important question. He got the same exact answer, the same point that he was given when he first met Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in 1922 at Altadanga in Calcutta. That you should spread this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. So Prabhupada actually is a reflection of that verse, Tadvati Pranipatina. That's right. The quality is the most important thing. Even if you only have one question, the quality is the most important. That's right. Of course, Prabhupada didn't need as much instruction as we do. That's a difference. The fifth item given by Rupa Goswami is that one should inquire how to advance in Krishna consciousness. There's a gulf of difference between our position and Srila Prabhupada's position. He's a Nitya Siddha. So for us, we may need to ask more than one question for a spiritual master. I know I have many, many questions to Srila Prabhupada, and he mercifully answered me. I have 10 letters full of answers. And he knew many, many, many questions. So we may need more than one question. How can I serve you? Of course, if you're a Nitya Siddha, then maybe that one question may be all you need. How can I serve you? But if you're a sadhana, trying to become a sadhana Siddha, conditioned soul, trying to come out of the cycle of birth and death, then one should see where I can get the best opportunity, how I can get more and more opportunities to inquire for my spiritual master, to make sure I'm right on the track. Is that interesting? Questions more? Yes.
Sometimes we feel very angry with the men. There are others where you don't feel so angry. So, can you talk about how you can, how you can show pain about it? Some devotees we feel easy or ease, and some devotees we don't.
With them?
Yeah. So, how can we
sit
around with those
so
that we feel
in
those
situations? How we can feel comfortable with everyone? Yes. The key is actually becoming humble. If we become very, very humble devotees, then we can feel comfortable anywhere and everywhere, in any kind of situation. But if we're packing false ego, then it's tough.
What if we have to defend ourselves from
If we have to defend ourselves?
From feeling ourselves mistreated.
Well, sometimes I may think I'm being mistreated, but actually it could be I'm just really getting special mercy to help me come to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. I have to develop the ability to understand. And that comes by being very sincere, by Atmanas being in Mulda Bhakti. Tesham Satati Yuktanam, Bhajatam Sati Purabhakam, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yena Mam Priyanti Te. Those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding of which they can come to me. So the key is, Manaji, you have to become very, very sincere about becoming a pure devotee of Krishna. And then he will give you the ability to understand what is actually, you know, what's coming to you is, what is the nature of it. Is there some special message here that Krishna is giving me through this devotee? Or is it just that devotee, you know, not? We have to learn to be able to discriminate. Because as neophytes, I can tell you, after, you know, 30 years of being in this movement, as neophytes, we have a tendency to think, well, this is just this devotee's problem. It's not my problem, it's his problem. We have a tendency to find fault with the other person, not with us. That's not good for us, that tendency to find fault with them. The best thing is to think, I must be doing something wrong. Otherwise, why is this happening? I must be doing something. You should always be looking deep into your heart to see, what am I doing wrong? You may say, well, that sounds so disgusting. I don't want to do that. But actually, I can give you an insider secret. When you take that kind of a move, you have a position in which you can always be ecstatic. Because nobody can ever... It's not like now you're caught. You've already put yourself in a position to where you understand that you're in desperate need of being rectified from your fallen consciousness. If you always feel that way, that I am desperately in need of being rectified from my lust, my anger, my greed, my madness, my illusion, my envy, then whatever comes, you can see it in a very transcendental way and not be disturbed by it, and actually feel, this is a blessing. Does that make sense? Or is it confusing you? Not sure how to understand it? Nothing happens without the sanction of Krishna. So no matter what, we have to try to see that everything that's come to us, that Krishna has allowed this to come to us for a reason. Maybe it's an opportunity for us to actually point out the fault of that person. It could be that. Or it could be an opportunity for that person to point out the fault in me. So how do you tell the difference? That requires sincerity. If you always remember that you're a very fallen soul, who's desperately in need of being rectified from her fallen consciousness, and in that state of humility, Krishna will give you the intelligence to make the distinction between when you need to correct them and when you need to take the correction from them. Is that all? Because the fact is, you know, I have my faults, you have your faults, I have my good qualities, you have your good qualities. Every one of us has a combination of good and bad qualities, except for the completely pure devotee like Prabhupada. He's just pure with nothing but good qualities. So, the mood of a Vaishnava, as Prabhupada explained, is like a honeybee. He's always looking for the good. He's never looking for the bad. The non-devotee, he's like a fly, is always looking for the sower, or looking for the stool. So anytime we're dealing with Vaishnavas, they may have so many faults. Because we're all, you know, we all have a combination of good and bad qualities. It's like, you know, I'm talking to you. You see? And I know that you have a combination of good qualities and bad qualities. But if I'm going to be if my explaining to you is actually going to benefit you and help you, and if it's actually going to, if I'm actually going to be doing my proper duty to be a servant, you see, my duty is to be your servant, you see. So if I'm going to do my duty properly to serve you by the way that I'm answering your question, even though I know you have a combination of good and bad qualities, I'm going to be able to see your good and your bad qualities. But I have to especially be seeing the good in you and wanting to help serve you by helping you to get rid of those bad qualities which are blocking the good from fully coming out of you that you have within you. So this is how we should always be in the mood of serving everyone that we're dealing with. We want to be an instrument. We want that our association will be a benefit for everybody that we're associating with, to help that person become more Krishna conscious. You see? That we should always think that way. How can I be a servant to help this person become more Krishna conscious? Does that help? So it's perfectly clear now, or you need more clarification? Perfectly clear? Oh, very good. Yes.
And if someone is, mistreated or unintentionally mistreated or intentionally mistreated, then Krishna, if we remain in our humble position, then will Krishna take care of those kind of things?
Krishna says, I preserve what they have and I carry with their life. If you're in the mood of, you know, completely, totally dedicating all your love to Krishna, which is what Krishna demands. If we're doing that, then Krishna will cover everything. That's the fact. He'll cover all of it. He'll always be there. If there's some trouble, he'll be there to bail us out. That's the fact. If we just have that exclusive devotion to Krishna, he'll always protect us, he'll always be there. Just like in the old West movies, you know, the wagon train was going across the West and the Indians came in and the flame arrow, the wagon is on fire, and over the hill comes the U.S. cavalry. So Krishna will always come to the rescue, even when it seems like it's hopeless, you know. The wagons are burning and it looks like we're going to be scalped any minute now, but here comes the cavalry. Krishna will always rescue us. If we're in that mood of exclusively worshiping him. Okay. Any other questions? Everyone really totally satisfied now, ready to discover the world for Prabhupada? Yes?
Since
Prabhupada
was not the present here,
the Krishna Bhagavatam,
so how we can see that it is completed
in the Bhagavatam? How can we see that Prabhupada completed the Bhagavatam? Well, the GPT is publishing the whole thing. So Prabhupada said that actually we are, that he, Prabhupada told us how he acts through us actually. That you are the, how did he say, you are the parts of my body. Well, ISKCON is his body, that's right. So each one of us, we are part of ISKCON, isn't it? So we're all parts of Prabhupada's body. So Prabhupada did finish the Bhagavatam through the agency of his disciples. It's not that he did complete it. Questions more? Yes.
How do we redeem ourselves from the offenses we've committed to the holy name and to devotees?
How do we redeem ourselves from the offenses we've committed to the holy name and to the devotees? Well, the easiest way, I know one time a devotee made the point in class in Vrindavan, you know, we have to avoid the offenses. But see, that's a negative way of looking at it. I mean, it's important, but the best way is to see it in a positive way. If I'm always worshipping the devotees, then there's no room for them. So that's the easiest way. And this is stated actually by Srila Prabhupada in Nectar Devotion. He explains, by offering obeisances to and meditating on the devotees, then one becomes free of all sinful reactions. Now, that doesn't mean meditating like Kamsa. No. That means meditating favorably. There's anukul and patikul. That means favorably thinking, well, this devotee is nice quality, that devotee is nice quality, in this way. So if you're always thinking nicely about the devotees, appreciating their qualities, their activities, in this way, there's no room for offense. And I can tell you an insider secret. To the extent that you have nice relationships with the devotees, to that extent, your relationship with the holy name will automatically be there. It is more important to worship the devotees than it is to worship Krishna, according to Lord Krishna himself. Worshipping is, that's why we worship Guru also. See, because worshipping the devotee, is, according to Krishna, is more important than worshipping him himself. So, to whatever degree we actually develop nice relationships with the Vaishnavas, to that degree we can have a nice relationship with the holy name. Of course, you can come from the other angle also. You can work it from both ends. By improving your relationship with the holy name, then you will be inspired to have better relationships with the devotees also. So from that angle, you should always remind yourself that this is Krishna himself. He has mercifully agreed to come here and bless me, even though I'm the most contaminated snake. He has agreed to come here and bless me with his direct association, dancing on my tongue, my contaminated tongue that ate so much meat, liquor, cigarettes, or whatever I did. Such a contaminated tongue, he's agreed to dance on this tongue. How kind Krishna is. So let me receive him nicely, you see. It's like when a spiritual master comes, the devotees make all nice things, they greet him with a kirtan, they serve him hand and foot, they dispashad him, you know, everything is laundry, everything. Very nice service to the Guru Maharaj as much as possible. So, in the same way, we have Krishna is personally coming, he's Adi Guru, the original Guru. We have to give his holy name all respect and service. So take a proactive approach, that's in short, take a proactive approach to offenses. Having such a nice relationship with the holy name, there's no room for offenses. Have such a nice relationship with the devotees, there's no room for offenses anymore. Your 24 hours is so filled up with glorifying the devotees and glorifying the holy name, there's just no time to offenses. Any other questions?
But Prabhuji, in case of non-devotees, sometimes they humiliate us. In case of non-devotees, they have, you know, they sometimes humiliate us. So
they sometimes do what?
Humiliate us.
Yes, okay. Well,
and in this case, the humbleness and mood of the devotee, what should we do?
Yes. In Africa, Srila Prabhupada told us, he said, I act like a king, because nobody can defeat me. Humility doesn't mean to roll over and play dead when the karmi starts, you know, blaspheming the process of Krishna consciousness. In that case, humility means to fight for Prabhupada, like Arjuna did. The more humble you are, the more you become an instrument in the hands of your guru. In the hands and that humility in the hands of your guru, there's an enemy attack, means you fight like anything and defeat those rascals. Prabhupada told us, you go village to village. This word digvijay, you may know that word. It means conquering, one who can conquer in all directions, you see. Nobody can defeat him.
an enemy can attack from any side and you defeat that enemy. That's called Digvijaya. So Prabhupada told us, as you go village to village, city to city, and town to town, and you make Digvijaya, that there is God. I can prove there is God. Who are you who say there is no God? Come on! That is Digvijaya. So, the devotee, he is a powerful warrior. He's a spiritual revolutionary. He goes out to the material world, and his humility is to turn the world upside down and make a revolution for Prabhupada. That's his humility. He's a humble servant in the hands of Guru and the previous acharya. That's his humility. To defeat them, to take over the world for Prabhupada, that is his humility. Does that make sense?
Did not an offense?
Huh?
Did not an offense?
No, no, no. It's an offense if you don't say something. If you don't have any objection to this demoniac civilization, your so-called peace, peacefulness, is an offense. If there is something going wrong and you don't say anything, then you're guilty. That means you're apathetic. You have no compassion. If we don't preach, we are committing jiva aparada. If a man is drowning in a river and you just stand there and don't do anything, have you committed an offense? Of course you have. If someone is drowning, you must try to save them. If you don't try to save them, you are an offender. So if we don't try to save the world, as Prabhupada has ordered us to do, if we don't try to save the world, then we are operating, we are offended. We disobey the order of the spiritual master to preach to them and save them. Is that clear?
Yeah. And one more question.
Okay.
Can you explain a little bit more? How can we use the proactive approach in that particular
thing?
Proactive approach.
Proactive.
Yeah.
Sure. Book distribution. That's the supreme proactive activity. You have Prabhupada's book in your hand. My dear sir, this is for you. This will change your life. Take this book. That's the way to be proactive, book distribution especially. That is the supreme proactive activity for a devotee, instead of books. Either put them on the street, go work a book table on a street corner, somehow or other be there with the books. And then you're really doing something powerful for Prabhupada in the previous assurance. Any other questions? Yes?
Can we preach
to the person who may be the atheist or any? Yes. So one may wonder, well, what's the offense against the holy name to preach to the faithless? Well, I have my excuse now. I didn't want to preach anyway, and the whole world is faithless, so sorry about it. One could take that position. But we know that Prabhupada told us to approach everyone with a book. So how do you balance those two instructions? How do you see them in a non-contradicting manner? That I'm supposed to approach everyone with a book, but I'm not supposed to preach to the faithless. Well, the real thing is that on one level, everybody has faith. It's just buried, it's covered by faithlessness. Everyone, every single jiva is actually jivara sarupa hai, krishnara nitya das. Every single living energy is actually a pure devotee. So they are faithful. But that faithfulness is covered by millions and millions of layers of faithlessness. So the key is you have to become expert how to somehow connect with the faithfulness in their heart and the way you approach them and the way you explain without agitating their faithlessness. As one devotee said, you have to be expert to cut away the cancer without getting any nerves. In other words, everybody, and Prabhupada is very expert. He can tell an atheist, you're a demon, and the person would like it. So So it's a matter of being, the more you have to, you know, you have to do it. Prabhupada actually wrote me a letter, and he said you have. I asked him about how to distribute books. He gave me some personal instructions about book distribution. He said that if you simply describe the books in the most descriptive, in the best descriptive manner, then you'll be able to convince anyone, even an atheist, to purchase them. So Prabhupada's Shakti is there, his blessing is there. If we simply explain the books in the best descriptive way, the choicest poetic manner, you see. If we explain these books, I've seen. If you just try to do it in a very attractive poetic way, it's amazing how people will be attracted. I was giving a presentation at a Christian church. And I was going on and on, because, you know, Jesus, we accept him as a bona fide spiritual master. So I was glorifying Jesus, and they were all smiling and happy. And after all of this, I had to tell them, you know, the bad news about not eating meat. You know, I had to do that, otherwise I'm in like a needle and out like a needle. We can come in like a needle as long as we come out like a plow. So I had to, come out like a plow and tell them, you're wrong. What you're doing is wrong. I had to tell them. But how to do it in such a way they don't get offended, they don't become angry, you know? So, what I did was, you know, this word beef, which, you know, applies to cow, it also has a dual meaning. It means arguments. So at the very end, I said, yes, it's all very wonderful, you're worshiping Jesus. But I said, but we have one beef with you. And that is the beef. And they all laugh. They love it. The poetry of it, the poetic way I did it, just, they're always in bliss. And I thought, yes. And I explained to them how we're told that this meat eating is not very religious thing. And they had been so attracted by the poetic way I explained it, they didn't get agitated. They were very interested to hear how I explained it to them. So it's just a matter of developing the expertise. I know last year we were at one airport, Anandji and I, getting ready to fly on to the next destination. And some atheist came up. He saw us in our religious garb, you know, in our tilak. He wanted to have a little fun, you know, smashing some religious people. I mean, I could smell the vibe a mile away, you know, if he approached me. He came up, he said, what is your philosophy? And I knew who I was dealing with, so I said, know who you are and be who you are. And he couldn't say it. So you just have to, you know, you have to try your level best to approach everybody in such a way that they can't disagree with you and they have to agree with you. And if you do that sincerely, that's why there's nothing more exciting than being a preacher. You know, going out and preaching day after day, week after week, because the more you do it, the more you become expert. And the more you become expert, the more it becomes enlivening. So, always try to present Krishna consciousness to everyone, but in such a way that they can't help but be attracted. And you'll become more and more potent and more successful, and pretty soon you'll reach a point. It'll take a while, but you'll finally reach a point where you can give Krishna to anyone and everyone in such a way that they'll at least be respectful, so they won't be offensive. So, one last question? Okay.
You were saying how when someone is drowning, is how we usually save them. And when in trying to save them, we think we're going to drop if we're not as strong as we thought we are.
What if we're trying to save them, we drown it? What is it?
If you're trying to save a drowning person, and just in case you sink with them.
But if you drown along with them?
How do you know when you're strong enough to be able to save them?
In other words, you don't want to go into deep water, which is beyond your means to. Well, the Lina Parashita, you can judge by the result. I mean, look what Haridas Thakur was able to do, you see. If I tried to imitate Haridas Thakura, but that being all alone with a prostitute for 3 nights, a naked prostitute for 3 nights, I may not make it. See, I couldn't imitate Haridas Thakura. So you have to, one has to very honestly know one's own limit. One has to have a very clear vision of where one is at spiritually, very honestly know, and be able to see when I'm on track and when I'm getting off the track. If I'm preaching to someone in such a way that I can see that I'm going off the track, then I should be really careful. So you really have to, it really comes down to being honest with yourself, to know when you're getting off the track. And if you can see, I'm getting off the track here. I can't imitate Hare Hastakur. I have to do something different. You know, take the prophecies of the temple, not sit it alone with her at night, the 3 nights in a row, and take her to the temple, introduce her to the modesty, something like that. It's an example. So you really have to know your own limits, and then, you know, make sure that you have to be honest about, honestly be able to analyze your own Krishna consciousness and see if you're solid or if you're being weakened by something. All right, anything else?
Yes, Prabhupada, I have one question.
All right.
I come from a time, I'm reading Srila Prabhupada's biography, and I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm studying the stages of self-realization. There are 5 stages. And can you differentiate the spiritual platform and transcendental platform?
Yes. Prabhupada uses in his books different terms in different contexts. Something that's used in one way in a certain context is used in a different place in a different context. Even in the English dictionary, there are primary, secondary, third level, fourth level definitions for words. So you have to always see the context. Sometimes I recall seeing where Prabhupada would use spiritual and transcendental. Spiritual refer to lower level transcendentalists such as jnanis and yogis. I had to see the exact context in which Prabhupada is differentiating between the spiritual platform and the transcendental platform. If you want to come and meet me and show me in my room today, you can bring that exact statement, and then I can analyze it. It's just on what you said, it depends on how I use the term. Yeah. So you can come for darshan, I'll be happy to answer. Anything else? Alright, so everybody get out there now. Dedicate your day to Prabhupada, to purifying your heart, and purifying the heart of everybody you meet. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So the Sankhya Sambhu ki jai.